312-981-7200 is our phone number. If you have a question for our next guest, May is Mental Health Awareness Month. The DuPage County Health has a website. If you have questions or anything health related, go to DuPageHealth.org. Let's bring in a partner from DuPage County Health. It's psychologist Dr. Amy Morin. Doctor, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
Do you get stir crazy during self-quarantine just like the rest of us?
Fortunately for me, my situation is a little different. I live on a sailboat, which means I can bring my house anywhere I want to go. So I can shelter at home, but I can do it while I'm snorkeling at a coral reef.
Oh, my
gosh. So it's not
that
bad.
How is that for your anxiety? I bet it's just wonderful, isn't it?
You know, again, not that bad, I have to say.
Are you hearing from a lot of people that they are depressed because they're stuck at home?
I am. You know, the first couple of weeks I was hearing from people who were experiencing high rates of anxiety, but by about week three, I started hearing from people who were saying, you know, I'm starting to get really depressed. The days are all blending together. Mm-hmm. My sleep schedule is really off. I'm eating all day or just eating snack foods and not real meals. And I'm just not even interested in video chatting with people anymore. I'm just kind of bored and blah and just not feeling like myself.
Yeah. What do we do for that? I mean, I feel like you just described me and all my friends.
Well, you know, I think so many people are feeling that way. And one big thing that's super important, you just take a look at what are your usual go-to coping strategies. Maybe you went to the gym. Maybe
yes.
You used to hang out with your friends.
Yes.
A lot of those things are gone in the traditional sense, but maybe you can still do them in some way, whether you work out in your living room or you say, okay, I'm going to have a Zoom call with my friends.
Right.
But research will show one of the best things we can do for ourselves is to, we call it pleasant activity scheduling, which basically means put something fun in your calendar. And even if it's something like, I'm going to watch a movie on Friday night, plan ahead. And when you have something to look forward to, you feel better. And then when you do that fun thing, you get a second boost in your mood. And then after you do it, your mood stays elevated. So it's like this three-pronged approach that really packs a good punch against depression is schedule something fun and then do it.
Wow, it's all about scheduling, isn't it? Everybody needs a schedule every single day.
That's very true, because right now so many people are just finding that the hours are weird. You know, the day ticks by. You don't really know what time of day it is, or it doesn't matter as much as usual. The days start to blend together, and we just really lose track of time. And then when we lose track of time, we feel weird.
Oh, boy. Wow. I mean, there's people listening right now that are very, very anxious. How do you get the worry down? How do you lessen the worry?
One of my favorite tricks, and it sounds ridiculous, but it works. I do it with people in my therapy office all the time,
okay,
is that you schedule time to worry. There's research, there's plenty of studies that will show this works too.
Wait a second. So schedule worry time too.
Yeah, you need something fun in your schedule, and then you better set aside 15 minutes a day to worry. Put that in your schedule. But research will show people who do that are able to contain their anxiety, all their worries, to just 15 minutes. So somebody who says, gosh, I worry all day long about everything, once they start worrying, and it's not their worry time, so let's say somebody says my worry time is from 6 to 6:15, they start worrying 6 hours before that, well, then the goal is to just remind yourself it's not time to worry yet.
Oh,
and when you finally get around to your worrying time, sit down and worry a little heart out for 15 minutes. And then when your time's up, you get up and go do something else. And with practice, people are able to then contain their worrying to just 15 minutes a day.
Wow. I mean, as ridiculous as it sounds, it seems to make sense. So when do you schedule the worry time? I would schedule it in the morning just to get it out of the way. But when do most people schedule it?
You know, I find a lot of people find it helpful in the evening. So that way, when they're worrying during the day, they can say, I'll do it later. Because sometimes it's like, oh, if my worry time isn't until 8 a.m. tomorrow, I want to worry about this now. It's 2 p.m. But if they're able to do it a little later in the day, that helps. But of course, you don't want to do it right before bedtime. If you worry right before bedtime, that can keep you up later because it's a little harder to distract yourself. So sometimes right before dinner, maybe right after dinner, something like that, so that you still have time to go do something else before you go to bed.
Boy, I would think before dinner would be a perfect time to schedule the worry time. So what are we talking here? 15 minutes, 20 minutes, a half hour?
You know, usually 15 minutes is what most of the research will show. So if you can just set aside 15 minutes a day to, some people sit down and they worry just thinking, some people write it down, either way is fine.
I would think that writing it down, writing anything down, really kind of clears things up, especially if you're feeling anxious about anything. Wouldn't that help?
It can. And so I think one of the goals is if you're going to do that, to just make it, contain it to 15 minutes. Sometimes people really enjoy writing in a journal, and they can journal for hours or pages upon pages. But studies will show, too, when it comes to journaling, you don't always just want to keep focusing on all the bad stuff, because sometimes that just keeps reminding you of all the things that are going wrong in the world. So
right.
You might want to stick to the facts. You might want to limit the amount of time you spend writing down your worries. But yeah, it can absolutely help you as long as you don't end up doing it too much.
Here's the problem with me writing a journal, because I feel like someone someday is going to find it, and I don't want them to have my inner thoughts.
That's a valid concern, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, because it makes me nervous if I'm feeling anxious about something, or if I'm questioning something and I write it down on a piece of paper, and next thing you know, 15 years later, somebody finds it and they're reading it.
Exactly. So, you know, you can do a couple of things. You might say, once I'm done writing in this notebook, I'm going to throw it away, because you probably don't want to go back and read it 10 years from now anyway.
And I was going to mention, do people go back and read their journals?
You know, some people like to. It sort of depends on what kind of a journal you keep. If you keep a gratitude journal, you might want to keep that forever, because it will remind you of the good things. But if you're just writing about all the sort of the bad stuff going on in life, you may not want to revisit that anyway.
We're talking to psychologist Dr. Amy Morin. You talked about the gratitude journal. Are you just writing down things that you're grateful for? Is that what it is? And do you schedule a time for that, too?
Well, you know, it's just, yeah, it can be as simple as saying, I'm going to identify three things I'm grateful for today and write it down on a piece of paper.
Okay.
But there's some, you know, just like we said, you don't want to schedule time to worry right before you go to bed. You might want to write in a gratitude journal right before you go to bed, because there's research that shows writing in a gratitude journal before bed helps improve the quality of your sleep. You'll fall asleep faster, you'll sleep longer, but you also feel better rested when you wake up, and who doesn't want that?
Well, how about people that aren't really writers and they're not writing things down? Can you just think about it in your brain, think about what I'm worrying about for 15 minutes and then be done with it? And the same thing with the gratitude?
Absolutely. A lot of people aren't into writing it down, and you don't necessarily need to. You can figure out what works best for you. But if you're somebody that just wants to think, okay, here are three things I'm grateful for before your head hits the pillow, or maybe even before you wake up in the morning, mm-hmm. it's just as helpful. I mean, you live longer, you get happier. The benefits of gratitude can go on and on and on. And same with worrying. If you decide you just want to think about it, go for it.
Right. I mean, this is unprecedented time that we're in right now. A lot of people in self-isolation that haven't left their house in weeks. How important is it? We talked about having a schedule, but just getting up, taking a shower, and getting out of your house, especially today. It was over 70 degrees here in Chicago.
You know, fresh air, being in nature, the list goes on and on about those benefits, too. And so I think it's vital to think, hey, I'm not just staring at these walls anymore, but that I can get out and enjoy the sunshine and the fresh air and feel the wind in your hair. All of those sorts of things are really good for us.
And why is that? Why is it getting outside? Why does that put us in a good mood? Just because we're moving our body and breathing fresh air?
You know, that's part of it, I think, moving around and doing things. But there's a lot of studies about nature in particular. So even if you can be in a green space, from looking at a grass in the park or being around trees, it does something to our brains. Our brains are so distracted when we're surrounded by electronics all day long. It takes a toll on us. It wears us out. But there's some pretty interesting studies about the restorative effects of nature, being outside and enjoying, you know, the flowers that are coming up and the grass when you see it, and being able to look at some trees gives your brain a break.
Right, right. I completely get that. And connecting with other people, is it better to have a video call, or is it better just to pick up the phone, or it doesn't matter?
You know, I think it depends on the person. For some of us, I think it's draining to be staring at yourself, because, again, research will show you spend way more time staring at yourself than the other person when you video chat.
Why is that?
Because we're
looking at ourselves thinking, oh my gosh, I got to lose 5 pounds. My hair looks terrible. I need a haircut.
Right. And I think it speaks volumes about how sort of self-conscious we are. Like, oh, I look good from this angle. And we're moving around and seeing how the light looks from different angles and those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're just, you know, we're just, we don't normally see ourselves talk. So it's like this opportunity to see, oh, this is how I look when I talk. You know, very rarely does that ever happen in real life. So we're sort of fascinated by, oh, look, I've never really seen, this is how I look. So I think there's a few factors. And so I think for some people, it's just, you know, they're less likely to pay attention to the conversation and they feel like they aren't as able to connect with people. So I think in some cases, just, you know, an old fashioned phone call is better.
We're talking with psychologist Dr. Amy Morin. She is a partner from DuPage County Health. You can go to dupagehealth.org. If you have a question for Dr. Amy, 312-981-7200 is our phone number. You know, going back to the video calls, why are we so hard on ourselves?
I think for a lot of us, we forget, okay, I wouldn't speak to a friend that way, so why would I do it to myself? We tend to think that, you know, harsh self-criticism will motivate us to change, or we think, you know, I have to and practice tough love on myself. But again, research will show that self-compassion is the key to changing. If you want to do something different, don't talk about all the bad things about yourself. Remind yourself that you're okay.
And the self-deprecating humor, do you agree with that? Because it comes to a certain point where you're just making fun of yourself the entire day. Well, I trip over my own 2 feet. I can't string two sentences together, things like that.
Right. There's a line to be drawn. Sometimes our ability to laugh at ourselves and make fun of ourselves and point out the ridiculous things we do can be really helpful. But then there is a point where it's more like it comes from a place of low self-esteem, and we're almost looking for other people to validate that we aren't good enough. And so I think it's important to really look at that. You know, or when somebody compliments you, do you make fun of yourself because it's so uncomfortable to hear something good from somebody else? That's often the case. So it's sort of like, I'm just going to put this out there. It's like we have this anxiety about maybe being clumsy. So you always make fun of having two left feet. This
right.
is a defense mechanism.
And a lot of people, when we don't accept compliments, when someone says, oh, you look great today. Ah, oh, no, I don't. We throw it back at them.
Yes. And, you know, sometimes we minimize it. Oh, it was nothing. We give a compliment back. No, you look great. There's a lot of things that we do when we get a compliment, and it doesn't quite match up to the way we see ourselves. Like somebody says, you did such a great job in the meeting today. You're so smart. No, I'm not. Or we pass the buck to somebody else. We say, oh, so-and-so is much smarter than I am, or I couldn't have done it without the whole team. And while you want to acknowledge other people,
right.
sometimes it's okay to just say thank you. Even if you don't agree with it, just say thank you.
I'm reading Deborah Norville's book right now because I had her on the show a month ago, and it took me 3.5 weeks to finally get the book. But one of the things she says right at the beginning of her book, and, you know, she has that famous story where she was on the Today Show and she got booted right away after just a few months. But she talks about how long it took her to say, I did that, to use the word or the letter I. It was I. It was me. It took her weeks. It took her months to finally learn to say, I accomplished that. Does that happen a lot with most people?
It does. Studies will show women in particular struggle more with owning their success. You know, when we look at, say, LinkedIn profiles, men and women who have the exact same experience, men often go to the other extreme where they're more likely to exaggerate how much experience they have. But women are on the other end of the spectrum. They're much more likely to underestimate themselves and to sort of downplay their achievements because it feels uncomfortable. It feels like we're bragging. We don't want to make other people feel bad. But plenty of men feel the same way as well. I think we're just sometimes it takes your brain a while to catch up to the level of success that you're at.
Mm-hmm.
And so for a while, we just sort of downplay how successful we are because it feels awkward and uncomfortable.
That is true. On the phone with the psychologist, Dr. Amy Morin, you can go to dupagehealth.org if you have any health-related problems, including if you have some mental problems. Remember, May is Mental Health Awareness Month. I'm going to take a break, and when we come back, I want you to talk about marriages because marriages are being tested right now during self-quarantine. And I laugh because I'll tell you a story about my wife and I, how we had a little bit of a fight last week about the dumbest thing. And number two, I want you to give us some takeaways, things to do this week to make ourselves better and happier. Okay.
Okay, sounds good.
If you have a question for Dr. Amy, 312-981-7200. Remember, if you don't want to call in, a lot of people, you know, are uncomfortable talking on the air, you can also send us a text message at 312-981-7200. May is Mental Health Awareness Month. A partner from the DuPage County Health on the phone with us is psychologist Dr. Amy Morin. I want to talk about marriages right now, how we're all being tested and we're around each other 24/7. My wife and I got into a fight last week about liquid soap and foam soap. The dumbest thing, but I feel like it lasted for over an hour. And then we figured that this was stupid. So how can you help marriages out there during the self-quarantine?
So I think one is to just recognize, okay, if we're getting on each other's nerves, what are we likely to do? Just like you say, argue about ridiculous things, start to nag each other about something that you don't like. It's sort of like all the little habits and quirks just sort of get amplified when you're together 24/7. And so to just recognize that and to focus on, okay, what can I do to be the best partner I can today? If you woke up and asked yourself that question, you could be kinder, more compassionate, nicer, all of those sorts of things. Too often we focus on what's wrong with our partner rather than what we can change. So focus on what you can control, which is your behavior.
Right.
You can certainly have conversations about, you know, gosh, when you are on the phone and you're so loud and I can't work in the room, it's really difficult for me. Or
wait a second, you know, are you listening in?
I hear from so many people who are, you know, like, oh, I was slamming stuff around or I was trying to give somebody the hint that they were being too loud. We'll just have a conversation about it and talk, you know, communication is definitely still key.
Right. We don't have patience anymore. We want things right away. There's just no patience. We need to work on patience, don't we?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, right now, so many people feel like they're right on their last nerve anyway, and it doesn't take much to send them over the edge. So I think it's just really important to take some deep breaths when you have to, you know, go to the other room when you need a break, find some things that you guys can do apart, which might be, you know, just watching TV in separate rooms for a little bit, but also then find things you can do together and reconnect. Just because you can't go out on a date on the town doesn't mean you can't sit and enjoy each other's company.
How do we do that? Give us some suggestions. I suggested last week, maybe my wife and I go pick up food. And she thought that was a little odd, but it was just something to do together to get out of the house.
Absolutely. I think, you know, a car, if you're going to be in a car on the way to the supermarket, that's fine. Or for places that still have takeout, if you go get takeout, there's nothing wrong with eating in your car together. But to get away from, you know, all the distractions, or if you're couples who are both working from home, I think a lot of them are working 24/7 right now and just can't shut it off. So if you can say, gosh, Friday night, let's just watch a movie together, and maybe you take turns picking the movie, or maybe you cook together, or you plan, let's bake a different dessert that was never made before, something like that, I think can really just help you stay connected.
One of the things that has helped our family, and I'm sure it has all over Chicago, is watching The Last Dance on ESPN, because it's not one of those things that you can binge watch on Netflix or someone can take turns watching it by themselves. You have to sit in front of the TV if you want to see the current episode. So tonight we have family time. It starts at 8 o'clock and we sit there for 2 hours and we'll pause it and talk about the episode. We'll talk about Michael Jordan. I mean, things like that I love. And I know my family makes fun of me, but I love that we're all sitting there and enjoying the same things.
And I think that's great, because I think that it's great that we have, you know, live streaming and things like that these days, or we're able to watch something on Netflix. But that's what happens more often than not. Everybody sort of retreats to their own corner, and even if you're watching your own show, you're
right,
always watching it in real time together. So I think that's a great idea.
Well, give us some takeaways this week. People are anxious. People are worried. People are depressed. What can we do this week?
You know, I think a big thing is come up with a list of what do you normally do that makes you happy. We call those your mood boosters. So maybe when life is normal, maybe you get together with your friends. Maybe you go for a run. Maybe you watch funny movies. Whatever it is, see if you can come up with 10 things that said, you know, if you woke up and you were really happy one day, what would you do with your day? Might even be listening to upbeat music. And then this week, just pick one of those things off of your list every single day. You may have to modify it a little bit because you can't go out to the movies or you can't go out to dinner with your friends, but get creative. Maybe you have a Zoom at dinner with your best friend, or you and your best friend still watch a movie over Netflix while you're on the phone together, come up with something. But if you can just pick some things off of your list, you'll feel better. Because what we normally do is we do the activities that keep us in whatever mood we're in. So if you wake up and you're sort of tired and depressed, you won't do much. And you'll stay stuck in that mood. So you have to do the opposite of how you feel. Pick something off your mood booster list and do it.
How do we get there, though? Some people can't take that first step. I mean, I've been there where you wake up, especially in Chicago, it's overcast, you know, like 5 out of 7 days during the week. And it's tough to get motivated, let alone be happy.
Sometimes you just use the 10-minute rule. Because sometimes we can't do something because we think that's going to take 3 hours and I don't have the energy to do it. Tell yourself you're just going to do it for 10 minutes.
Okay.
When you reach the 10-minute mark, give yourself permission to quit. But I guarantee 9 times out of 10, once you get to the 10-minute mark, you'll feel like you want to continue and you'll keep going. Because usually getting started is the hardest part. Once you get started, you can keep going. So if you just give yourself permission, all right, I'm going to work out for 10 minutes. And at the 10-minute mark, if I don't feel it, I'm going to give up. Most of the time, you'll keep going.
And just walking outside. I'm going to go walking for 10 minutes just to get out of the house and move my body.
Yep. And a lot of times, you know, you don't feel like it. You don't have much energy. But circle the block. And then you'll find, oh, when you feel come back, you feel a lot better.
Boy, I love that. So put together a happy list. 10 things that you would do on your perfect day. And they don't have to be complicated. They can just be, you know, reconnecting with an old friend, call a sibling or your parents, something like that.
Absolutely. It might just be I'd like to listen to happy music, watch 20 movies, and dance around the house, whatever it is. And, yeah, pick some things off of that list to do this week.
And anything else that you can suggest? I feel like we're all just in this black hole right now. We're just trying to climb out of it together.
Yeah, I think for anybody who's really feeling stuck, it's important to know that reaching out for help isn't a sign of weakness. It takes a lot of strength to say, okay, I'm struggling right now. And for people who can't see a therapist face-to-face, there's plenty of online therapy options, and they're usually quite affordable. You can text message a therapist these days. You can video chat if you want. You can email therapists. So if you just have questions, concerns, you want to reach out to somebody, absolutely do it.
Always reach out, especially when you're hitting your lowest point, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
I love it. Dr. Amy Morin, you are fantastic, Amy. We got to have you back on the show.
Oh, thank you. Anytime.
And this is good stuff, and I feel like I need to go home and think about, write down 3 things that I'm grateful for, and I'm going to schedule, you know, we're going to have you back. I'm going to schedule worry time this week for 15 minutes, things that I'm anxious about. I'm going to put together a list, and then I'm going to burn it afterwards.
Excellent.
because I don't want people to look at it. You're the best. Thank you for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me.
All right. That is psychologist Dr. Amy Morin. Boy, she was great. I hope you guys do that. Put together the happy list, 10 things you would like to do on a perfect day, which is great. All right. Quick break. It's 720 WGN.